Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to another Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio. I'm Callum Stoneman. Tech Talk, of course, our weekly look at what's going on in the world of technology from a blind and partially sighted perspective, although going to be sounding a little bit different this week. I'll come on to that in a minute. If you want to get in contact with us, please do techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Let us know if you've got any, have you had any Christmas tech highlights? Do get in touch and let us know. This week, we'll be looking back at some of the best moments from the show in 2025. So some of the best interviews, some of the best demos, and the usual co-hosts, Jackie Brown, Hubert Pavalkovich, and Natalie Curran are with me. And shortly we'll be sharing some of our favourite highlights and some of our favourite tech purchases as well. So lots to get through this week. Let's just get right into it. This is Tech Talk, best of 2025. At RNIB's Northern Ireland Tech Fair back in February, Jackie Brown got hands-on for the first time with the Monarch multi-line braille display. And I guess you could say the rest is history from there. We managed to catch her first impressions.
I'm at the HumanWare table and I'm standing with Lucy, and this product is called the Monarch. It's a multi-line braille display, graphics display, you name it, and it does it. So at the moment we've got braille coming up here. Hello, Lagan Valley. I am the new Monarch multi-line braille display, it says, from HumanWare. So I can display up to 210 lines of braille, as well as pictures and text-labeled diagrams. Please have a wee shot of typing on my keyboard below. I just love this. I've heard so much about it, but I obviously this is the first time I've seen it. So the Monarch is primarily, to be fair, for people in education, because it just offers so much in the way of diagrams, pictures, and braille as well. And it has a really good library of information already. It's being developed in conjunction with APH in America and HumanWare as well. So it's just a multi-line, you know, I say just, but it is a multi-line display. So if you want to read a book, you have multi-lines of braille, you know, multiple braille lines to read it on. And if you want to, you know, have pictures, diagrams and all that sort of thing, you can do it with this as well. Most of the other braille displays are one line only, so you just get one line of braille, but this has multi lines of braille, and eventually the screen readers will catch up with that so that they're able to cope with using multi lines of braille. But at the moment some of the displays are just one line, and the screen readers, JAWS and NVDA, they only read in one line at a time. So that is all coming. So this device is very future-proof in that sense. It's really, really brilliant for people in education, for staff and pupils. I mean, yes, it's expensive, we know that, but, you know, it's great. I mean, I just love anything Braille anyway. I mean, most things I'm very enthusiastic about Braille anyway. I love the idea of being able to feel diagrams and pictures, and I actually like the touch of the braille. It's not too sharp. Some braille devices that are multi-line are really quite what I would call signage braille, but this is really, you know, this is very nice. You could read at length. I think my fingers would get sore on some of the sharper displays, but this is very nice to read. It's what I would call comfortable. It is, it's very nice. And it has braille keys to input braille as well. So it's not just an output for graphs or whatever. It's got a fantastic, which I love, the actual multi-line braille, because the lines are in proper, you know, they're there's not a big gap between each line. Like, I've seen some that have, and the gap is quite big. Not that I mind, but I do love the braille on this. So I'm using a joypad on the right hand side. It's like a cross shape that you move, and so that I can move up to the top of the picture, get further up, and then move it further down when I've examined the top of it. So this is, you know, this is really, really, it's amazing, to be honest, because you're getting a representation and you can adjust it. So it's not just one thing on the screen and that's it. You can examine it in more detail. And then obviously, if you want, you have the Braille keyboard, and you could probably write, and well, you can write on this machine so that you have Braille. But you could probably, you know, give labels to these pictures, I would imagine. So I'm feeling it's a really good representation of whatever it is you're feeling. I would love using it with, you know, pictures of things, things that I've never seen before, to get a representation of what they look like, which I think, you know, that is kind of the idea for most people that have never seen pictures of buildings. Or I think there's all sorts of categories. There is a library that goes with this, and they're adding to the library all the time of different events, different places, different pictures. So it opens up a world to a blind person that's never seen things like that before. So that for me is really exciting. And, you know, the Braille, you know, being able to read Braille, a book on it as well with multi-line Braille, I think it's absolutely fantastic.
Dave Williams made it out to the CSUN conference earlier this spring. That is where he managed to catch up with Hans Weiberg from Be My Eyes.
You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio at CSUN 2025, and it is a huge honour to be with Hans Weiberg, who is the founder of the phenomenally popular Be My Eyes service, which is touching the lives of hundreds of thousands of blind people around the world. Hans, congratulations, you are celebrating 10 years since you founded Be My Eyes. Did you ever imagine all those years ago what Be My Eyes would become?
No. it's like a dream, and to be honest, of course, coming from a small country like Denmark, you have to think globally from the beginning, but I had not imagined that we will be here with 800,000 blind and low vision people downloading Be My Eyes, and more than 8 million volunteers. That is just totally amazing. That's more people than we as citizens in Denmark, so it is mind-blowing. So yeah,
indeed, if Be My Eyes were a country, it would be bigger than Denmark. That's right, phenomenal thing.
And it will be the most friendly, because everybody wants to help. So
indeed. And you're working with some incredible partners as well.
Maybe the thing people has been talking most about is our partnership with OpenAI, where you now can take a photo and get a description, but also our latest partnership with Meta around their Meta glasses, which we are super excited about, because now you can have both hands free, and that can be very, very helpful when you are in the kitchen, or you have something in both hands that where you need both hands to do something. And the fact that you can just say, "Hey, Meta," and then say, "Be My Eyes," and then we will connect you to a volunteer. That is so convenient and easy to do. And also, the glasses in itself, you can say, "Hey, Meta, take a picture," and then they will take a picture. And you can say, "Hey, Meta, take a picture," and send to, and then it will actually send it to someone. So it is the glasses are very amazing to use, and so. So helpful, absolutely.
That's been the big change, hasn't it, in the last year, I think, since we're all familiar with the idea of using Be My Eyes as an app on your smartphone that you're obviously holding in your hand, that since the smart glasses have really started to make an appearance, now we're able to use Be My Eyes hands-free.
Exactly, yeah. And that is, as you say, you can do the same thing with the phone, but it makes a huge difference when you have both hands-free. It is a lot easier to kind of point the phone or the glasses in the right direction when they are sitting on your face, because you have a more natural way of doing it, because you're kind of always pointing the head the right direction, so to speak. It makes a huge difference.
And it's not just the Meta glasses, is it? Obviously, the Meta Ray-Bans are very popular, talked about quite a lot, and a number of us are using Be My Eyes hands-free on the Meta Ray-Bans, but they're not the only smart glasses to support Be My Eyes.
Well, we are not available on any other glasses, but we are aware that there's a number of other glasses out there, and we are open to conversations with other glasses as well. The mission of Be My Eyes is to be a free service to our users, and I totally realize that the Meta glasses are not free, but they are among the cheapest out there, and that's why we really like to work with Meta, because it is a consumer product, and you can buy them for, I think it is $300, and that is the cheapest we have been able to find that really works. And is supported by a huge company, so you can kind of rely that they will also be around next year and so on. So that's why we are so happy about being able to work with a company like Meta, because they have the power to really support this.
And Hans, what have been some of the most memorable examples of where Be My Eyes has made a huge impact in the lives of a blind or partially sighted person over the last 10 years?
Well, we have a ton of histories, but yesterday a guy came up to me here at CSUN, and he was telling me that he was using Be My Eyes to do 3D printing. So he was, and I was completely blown away, and he showed me something he had printed totally on his own. So he has created this thing on the computer screen, and volunteers had helped him. Hey, now it looked like this, and you need to have something here and something there, and then he had done that, and then there's a whole process that I cannot explain that he went through with the help from AI and from volunteers and so on, and then he could hit prints, and then he actually had the thing in his hand. I was completely blown away by how patient he must have been, but also just having the nerve to do that. And that's kind of one of my favorite stories now. So.
Hubert Pavalkovich attended the RNIB IDS conference in Glasgow earlier this year, and he spoke to Meta.
My name is Agustin Meta. I'm based in California in the United States, and I work at Meta leading a team called Concept Engineering. I'm the director for the group, and our charter is building early prototypes, new concepts, and new ideas for our wearables devices group within Reality Labs.
Can we talk about the product most people have been talking about in the blind and partially sighted community when it comes to Meta over the last year? And it's the Meta Ray-Ban glasses that are pretty much everywhere at the moment. Can you give us a brief description as to what they are, first of all?
Sure. I mean, this is a product I'm extremely passionate about. My own journey in this space is a bit personal. My mom is blind. I have some vision issues of my own, as does my son and a few other family members. Throughout my career, I've tried to find areas where I can apply the tech stack I work on in a way that can help connect people regardless of their background or their physical abilities. There's a project I worked on at Microsoft called Seeing AI a number of years back that I think many in the blind and limited community are familiar with. I had the pleasure of contributing a bit to that. And when I joined Meta, there was a nascent project to build smart glasses. Again, I had the luck of being able to work on that a bit, and I really wanted to apply some of that same energy that I had done in past career to use AI to help people who are visually impaired. So first and foremost, the glasses we're shipping are eyewear. I think we made a really good decision in partnering with EssilorLuxottica and making something that was industrial designed to look good and feel good and be attractive eyewear first, as opposed to tech first. I think tech forward has turned people off. The glasses enable you to capture moments in your life that are exciting through pictures and video. They enable you to capture audio as well as listen to audio discreetly, but with high quality. It doesn't cover your ears up, but it sends the sound pretty close to just your ears so that others generally cannot hear it.
Now, one of the big points about these glasses is that they have become very popular in the blind and partially sighted community because, you know, people can have hands-free communication using services like WhatsApp and Messenger. People can ask AI various questions and get information and, you know, capture video content and do video calls without worrying which direction to point the camera. When they were being designed, did you expect at any stage for them to be this popular with the blind and partially sighted community, for whom it wasn't specifically designed for, but yet has become almost an essential tool in some people's toolboxes?
Me personally, yes. That's what attracted me to be in the group. From the company's standpoint, the initial product description and product requirements were not centered on accessibility, and they still aren't. They're marketed as a mainstream device. This is an aspect which I think is unique to companies like Meta, which, at least in the parlance of U.S. tech companies, we call a bottoms-up organization. That's in contrast to the more traditional corporate structure, which is tops-down. What I mean by that is other places I've worked, for example, Apple and more traditional companies, direction comes from leadership. Product vision is fed from your management chain downward. If you have a great idea, well, maybe you can feed it around, but ultimately you do what your boss tells you to do. Historically, Meta, and previously when it was called Facebook, is much more of a grounds-up type of culture. So engineers across the company are encouraged to put together hackathon projects, and that comes from the earliest days of the company. Many of the biggest features that we've shipped, even historically, like the Messenger product, the newsfeed, they were built out of side hackathon projects that weren't core things that someone's manager told them to do. So I bring up this segue because when we were early in on the development of the Ray-Ban Stories glasses, myself and a number of other members of the team created a bunch of hackathon projects and concepts around leveraging this form factor and compute stack to help blind and low vision users. We did demonstrations of using optical character recognition to read things. We did demonstrations of using AI to describe and read the world to the user. And all the aspects you mentioned about the glasses being the perfect form factor, the cameras pointing in the direction you're looking, your hands being free so you can operate a cane or use a guide dog or even just do whatever you want with your hands, the sound being private and discreet as opposed to using voiceover on an iPhone with speakerphone on, but not covering up the ears as traditional headphones would, thus giving you all the spatial audio cues of the real world, which are so critical to navigation and orientation and effective mobility. From the company standpoint, the initial pitch for the product was not one as an accessible device, but even from the earliest days of the project, there has been grassroots efforts among engineers who are passionate about this topic to build these feature sets in. And I think that's why it's been so effective, because we've had early demonstrations of all the features that our blind and low vision users love.
There seems to be an application for AI in just about every aspect of daily life nowadays. Back in May, Amelia Hilton spoke to a team looking at using AI to improve guide dog training.
An exciting study led by the University of East London is using artificial intelligence to predict which puppies are most likely to succeed as assistance dogs, including guide dogs, offering a new tool to support trainers and improve outcomes for assistance dog users. We're joined today by Dr. Mohammed Amir Hassini from the University of East London to learn more. Hi, Dr. Mohammed. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hello. Thank you very much for having me today.
So how did this project first arrive to you?
The idea came from a simple but powerful question. And the question is, what if we could predict which puppies are most likely to succeed as service dogs before we invest years of training? This would save time, resources, and help both dogs and people, live better lives. We had already done earlier work on using AI to understand dog personalities, which was published in Nature Scientific Reports and got a lot of media attention. That success led us to wonder if we could take things a step further and actually forecast success in assistance dog training using artificial intelligence.
And what are some of the main challenges in determining whether assistance dogs are progressing well?
Great question. Service dog training is long and expensive. It can take up to 2 years and thousands of dollars per dog. But even with expert trainers, it's really hard to know early on which dogs will succeed. Some dogs may seem perfect at first, but struggle later, and others might surprise you. That's where artificial intelligence can help. It looks at patterns in a dog's behavior, and we consider the behavioral scores at 6 and 12 months, and things humans might miss can be detected by the AI algorithms, and this helps predict future success more accurately and earlier than ever before.
And have you been working mostly with data or models, or have you been working with any dogs so far?
We've had the privilege of collaborating directly with two of the award's leading service dog organizations, including Canine Companions and The Seeing Eye, who generously provided real-world data on thousands of dogs, including behavioral profiles and ultimate training outcomes. In this study, we explored the predictive power of machine learning and deep learning models to forecast whether young dogs would successfully complete assistance training using data from the widely validated CBARC behavioral survey collected from volunteer puppy raisers at two key developmental stage, 6 and 12 months. We assessed how well AI could predict outcomes. Importantly, we tested our models across two different training programs to evaluate how generalizable the findings are in real-world setting. While our work is model-driven, it's grounded in real behavior from real dogs going through actual training pipelines. This isn't a lab simulation. It's practical, applied science. Our best-performing model trained on 12 months behavioral data achieved 80% accuracy, which is a significant breakthrough, and to our knowledge, the first time AI has been actually applied in this field and has achieved this level of success in predicting assistance dog outcomes. Previous studies have relied mostly on traditional statistical methods, and our AI model not only builds on that foundation, but clearly outperforms all previous approaches, setting a new standard in the field.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk, or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
Let's go over some of our highlights then, some of our favourite tech purchases from this year. Natalie, I'll start with you on this one. Have you got any particular highlights, anything that you bought last year?
I think the only things I really bought this year are a handheld braille device and the JAWS new package. And I suppose I can at least say by upgrading to JAWS, it did feel worth it pretty quickly, because I don't think I realised how sort of buggy my previous version had gotten. So it was nice for everything to work again, but not just work again, but be better. You know, I've got the different AI features and stuff that were introduced. And I have made a good use of my Braille labeller. So I've now labelled all my spice jars in my kitchen. And it just makes life that little bit easier. I sort of forgot how much, yes, technology can be great, but actually sometimes it's nice not to have to wave your phone around the place.
Yeah.
And just be able to read it.
I remember you telling me about this, actually, and thinking, it was almost like a bit of a, sounds daft, but it was almost like a bit of a brainwave. Oh yeah, I could do Braille labels. That'd be nice and easy. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, exactly. You kind of forget.
Hubert, what have you got?
Well, I also did buy the Braille labeler, and I do love it for my medication cabinet. However, my other highlight purchase, and I don't think I'll be the only one kind of reflecting on this, but my favourite purchase has to be the Meta glasses.
Yeah.
For me, they've been exceptional, not only in restaurants, but I think when I went abroad to America earlier this year, I used them in so many different scenarios, whether it's reading menus in the hotel restaurants or other restaurants, or whether it's shopping and reading labels on products. It just, for me, felt invaluable as to how much assistance they have provided. Being able to, you know, take some videos and photos of my adventures, just all of that combined just proved an essential assistant for me during my abroad trip. So yeah, I finally caved in at the beginning of 2025 and bought them, and yeah, I definitely have not looked back.
Yeah, pretty similar for me, to be honest. I think technically it might have been the back end of last year that I got them. I honestly can't think. But yeah, it's massively helpful. You don't realise, I think, until you get them how much they can actually do. And just, you know, unexpected things that crop up where you kind of use them. Jackie, I have a feeling I know what you're going to say with this one, but I'll let you comment on it.
It has to be multi-line Braille for me. I am just still in awe of multi-line Braille, and just you don't realise when you start reading, you know, several lines of Braille in one hit that, you know, how useful, how beneficial, how enjoyable it is. And I'm not saying anything whatsoever against a single line Braille display. They are absolutely amazing. Any Braille for me is just fine. You know, that's great. But to have multi-line Braille it's the holy grail, really, I guess. And yeah, that has to be my favourite purchase this year.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised. If I could get, I mean, I got hands-on with the dot pad at the start of this year, very briefly. I've had hands-on with the Canute as well. And I've said it a few times this year, but, you know, I'm looking forward to it. And I'm looking forward to seeing where this goes next year. Although we've been talking a lot about the graphical side of it and being able to, you know, kind of produce graphics and have those really detailed images. Have you actually been using this like in a kind of everyday sense? You know, because I'm thinking about like reading spreadsheets, yeah, reading tables, reading emails easier. Have you been doing that sort of thing?
Yeah, I have. Because both the Monarch and the DotPad X, they will pair with your PC, so you can use them with JAWS and NVDA. In the case of the DotPad X, you can now use that with iOS. And for me, that has been mind-blowing, because to be able to sit with the DotPad X on my lap and put the speech to mute on my iPad and read a Kindle book. I've recently finished a Kindle book, reading my first Kindle book just on a multi-line display. You used to have to use a program called Codex and actually decode the format that the Kindle books come in. That was quite a long time ago, and now you obviously can't do that. So actually reading a Kindle book within the Kindle app is, for me, I just think it's amazing. All you do is just keep reading, press the panning key to turn the page or to move on to the next set of Braille lines, and it's really great. It's very responsive, so it's really exciting to have that ability in addition to the graphics and the images and things like that that you can draw with and actually get. I think the Monarch will come. I think that's something we look forward to in 2026, with possibly iOS on the Monarch. I think some people have tried it with a beta version of iOS. I'm not doing that. I'm just going to wait And I just think that there's just so much with multi-line braille technology altogether that there is to look forward to.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, very exciting. I feel like I'm going with a bit of a boring one this time, but it's an app for me. I demoed a few months ago now the Todoist app, which is like a kind of reminders and, you know, to-do list and kind of productivity app. And I did end up, at the time when I demoed it, I was just on the free version. I did actually end up signing up to the premium to kind of get some of those more advanced features and to be able to set reminders and also be able to set deadlines for stuff and set kind of how long I think a task is going to take. And it sounds really boring, but I'm one of these people, I don't know what it is, but I'm so good at finding an excuse not to do something. I'm very sort of, yeah, I need to do this, but
the practice of procrastination.
Oh, honestly, I will wake up in the morning and think, right, today I need to do this, and then I'll get this done, and then I need to sort this out, and then I'll kind of sit down at my computer or whatever, and something will throw me off, and I'll just get distracted, and I'll sit there scrolling, or it will be kind of, I'll end up doing something that, yeah, okay, I need to get done, but it's really not the important thing to get done, and it's like, oh, I'll do that later. And then before I know it, there's been like 3 days where I've needed to get something done, and I've just not. And I think the way that Todoist does this is just really good. I mean, first off, having those, it puts a badge on your home screen. So if you've got like 5 tasks on your list for that day, it'll say, when it reads the app out, it will say 5 new items. And I think just that on its own, seeing that, thinking like, right, okay, I've got 8 things that I need to do today. Let's get that down. You know, let's get that down to 0. And it does little kind of gamified things, like you can set daily goals of how many tasks you want to complete in a day and a weekly goal of how many tasks, obviously, you want to get done in a week, get ticked off. And it's only a small thing, but it's actually made a massive difference because, as I said, that number, for one thing, is just kind of bugging me. It's like, oh, that's quite high, is that? Right, okay, fine, yeah, I'll get it done. So that has actually made a big difference. And I know, Hugh, but you did the, was it Habitica? Was that the app that you looked at?
Yes, and I still use it because I have the same problem. I'll get back home from work knowing that I've got things to do, but I'll sit down on the sofa, put the football on and kind of go, I'm relaxed now, I don't need to do anything. And then my watch pings me because I set a lot of notifications, because notifications is for what makes me want to, what makes me remember to do things. It's like, thanks for the reminder, I need to do, because I do forget about things. There's often tasks which I set reminders for. So if a task is due next Friday, say, for example, I will set a reminder every few days just to keep me on track, because otherwise you do just forget about things. You do so many things in the day that sometimes you just easily forget. And being a gamer, I think that is quite something. I think that's why I wasn't sure about Todoist, but if it has game-based elements, I might actually revisit it.
Yeah, I mean, it's nothing massive, to be honest. It's just these little daily goals and streaks that you can build up, and there's different levels. I don't quite understand the different levels and point numbers, to be honest, but yeah, it's less of a kind of game. It's more just a little bit like what you get on the Apple Watch, you know, like keeping your move streak up and things like that. But it is quite good. I've even found myself putting stupid things on there, like, you know, put the washing in, because that's something that, let's be honest, it's a bit of a boring job. No one can really be bothered with it.
I reminded myself to eat fruit.
Like, that sounds such a, because that is quite a boring job. And I'm like, oh, I'll do that in a bit. And then never do. And then the next day I go to get some clothes out of my wardrobe. And I'm like, oh, yeah, do you know what? I really should have done that washing, because now I've got no clean jeans. Oh, for God's sake. Well, there you go. There's some of our highlights. If you've got any favourite purchases or favourite tech that's come along in 2025, as I said before, let us know. techtalk@rnib.org.uk.
Now, many of us use smartphones every day, but how much work actually goes into getting them to market, especially when they are made with blind and partially sighted people in mind? In July, Callum Stoneman spoke to the team from Real Sam.
Something we talk a lot about on Tech Talk is smartphones. What if you want a smartphone, but all those gestures on the touchscreen are just too much for you, too much to get your head around? What about a smartphone that you could control pretty much entirely with your voice? Well, that is the aim of the RealSam Pocket device. They have got some new updates recently, and we've got a couple of people joining us to talk a bit more about this. We've got Louise Humphreys, the UK country manager from RealSam, and also John Gallagher, who has been testing the new device. John, I'll come see you in a minute, but Louise, do you want to just, for people who are not aware, do you want to just tell us about the RealSam Pocket and what's new with this latest version?
Yeah, sure. So RealSam Pocket is a product that's been available since 2017 in the UK. It was initially launched with RNIB and O2 as a three-way partnership to help make primarily the RNIB reading services catalogue accessible by voice. So our history really is in being a reading device, and we're now on the fifth generation of our product. And with every generation, we've added more features and I guess more of these AI integrations that have allowed us to do more and more. So the latest product is RealSam Pocket Plus. It came out in June of this year. And really, this uses the latest cutting edge AI technology to make it incredibly easy to use our mobile device. We have a range of features on there. We still have RNIB content, lots of books, news and information, but primarily it's a very easy to use device that helps you with staying independent. So be that making phone calls, sending messages, or using a range of tools to help you in your day-to-day life.
So this allows you to, can you just talk through some of the services that are on here? You mentioned talking books and you know, accessible reading, but is it all aspects of the device that can be fully controlled by voice? So things like making calls, sending messages, how far does this go in terms of features and the things you can do?
Yeah, so it's working, the device is now working with a large language model throughout, which means that you can talk to the device in natural language and pretty much ask it anything. So if you were wanting to find a book, for example, you can say something like, can you recommend me novels by British authors that were released in 2024? I'm hosting a book club. We're interested in science fiction books. Can you suggest something that isn't too long? And so you're getting quite sophisticated responses coming back. And then you'll be able to just essentially play the book through the RNIB library, having found it just with your voice. You can ask the device for information about historical events or anything really that you might find useful. So that is a huge step forward and something that hasn't existed on earlier versions of our device. So that's all about helping you find access to the content that's on there. So we have books, news, magazines, radio stations, podcasts. So there's lots and lots there that you can find really easily. In terms of communication, you can make calls, you can send messages, you can access WhatsApp, and you can do all of that through voice. And again, with an intelligent interface, they're supporting you. And then we have a range of what we call our assistance tools. So we have a sight assistant, which enables you to capture an image and then ask questions of that image. So perhaps you've taken a photograph of what's in your fridge. You can ask a series of questions. So what would you suggest I could make for dinner with the ingredients that I have in my fridge here? Or can you tell me the sell-by date on this pint of milk? You can use your voice to adjust colour and contrast and zoom in. So a range of things that, if you're partially sighted, may also be helpful for you as well. So we're continuing to add features to the device, and obviously the intelligence of large language models is only increasing as well. So that with this product, you make a huge leap forward from any earlier version of Pocket where you perhaps had to be fairly rigid and prescriptive in what you said. But now you can speak freely to it and actually do so much more than you ever could before.
Now, John, you've been testing this. You've had early access to this new device and some of these new updates. What's your experience been? How have you found it?
Very, very interesting. And because now we've got AI and the steps forward are huge, and it really is easier, the device seems to recognize your voice a lot better. You can play the radio stations, internet radio stations. You've got the podcasts. And for someone who's just lost their sight, and also for somebody who does not use the internet very well, cannot access the touch screens, as we just said earlier, the ease of use for this device, even for myself, I've got the iPhone, the Android, the computer, and even with this, just to ask it to read me the Daily Mirror, it's just so easy. Which section you go to, I can say, can you read the sports section of the Daily Mirror? Can you read me the Sun? I also think the ability to look at something, read something. Yeah, we've got the access on the iPhone, but again, for someone who cannot see what something is, and the ability to ask it to take a picture and then ask questions about the picture is immense. And because of the future of AI, a device like this will only get lots better. And I think now, in the last couple of months, maybe the last year, it really is beginning to move forward. And the future, what I like is the fact we can have meetings with the developers at RealSam and say things like, why can't you incorporate Gemini onto this device? The absolute fantastic ability that people who can use devices like the iPhone, the Android, to ask Gemini anything is absolutely phenomenal. And for me, over the last loads of years, the ability to find my way around with sat nav, tuning the pianos, playing chess, the ability to have a good sat nav device on here would be absolutely incredible. And with WhatsApp, the ability to have someone to look on the camera of your real Sam, and you could say, where's the nearest pub? Guide me to the nearest railway station. Take me to the local bakery. Down here where I live, the road at the bottom here, Aberford Road, is so busy and so noisy. To have someone guiding you on a device like this, the future is immense.
If it really is as simple as just saying, guide me to the nearest pub, I'm sold. That's fine with me.
I don't know if it's quite that simple, but you could certainly ask where the nearest one is.
That's the ease of use for people that can't tap a screen and flick left, flick right, double tap and hold, three finger double taps. The ability to ask it to speak to it is so easy. And someone with no real skill with tech can do a lot of activities. All the tasks you can perform on the pocket device are made so simple because you can actually speak into it. And with the talking books, unlike the Amazon Echo, if you're reading an R&IB book, all of a sudden, every so many weeks, it just stops working and you've got to go online to register again with your username and password. Well, for someone who can't do that, this pocket device is so reliable with reading your books, listening to the radio and podcasts, and it's so simple to ask it to read you a talking book, whichever talking book, like Louise has just said.
I want to come back to something you mentioned at the start there, John, about you come across to me as someone who is at least, reasonably technical. Like you've got an iPhone, you've got a computer, you know how to use that. But even you're enjoying using this. I mean, I always look at devices like this and think, yeah, these are for the non-technical users. I mean, as I said at the start there, people who just can't get their head around a touch screen. But I'm interested in the fact that even for you, it's nice. I'm guessing what you're saying there is it's nice just having a simple device that you can just talk to and be natural with, I guess.
Yeah, and of course, with hands free, Not that I'm brilliant in the kitchen, but if I was making a meal in the kitchen or even looking at a chess game, I can now, with hands free, say the word to augment this device to do something. So you can use the device now hands free as well. So you don't have to keep the device in your hand or in your pocket. Ironic that, isn't
Yeah,
it?
nice.
You can actually ask it to, you can ask it to read you a book while you're walking around doing something else. Or, you know, eventually, like I've just said, if you could say to it, here in Woodlesford, can you tell me the next train to Leeds, or when's the next bus to Leeds? You know, the options are phenomenal, and that does help. You know, even though I can use the computer, the iPhone, you know, to go on there and do something, even just to say quickly, read the news section of the Sun, or read whichever section of which, I mean, you've got lots of magazines on this device as well. Which magazine? Loads of different magazines. It's the ease of use that is absolutely fantastic that you can do in a simplified way. Yeah, very true.
Not too long ago, we heard about the exciting plans to bring the Waymo autonomous ride-hailing service to London in 2026. Callum spoke to Amanda Ventura in London about this earlier in the year.
You know, people who have accessibility needs, people who can't drive, who shouldn't be driving, who don't drive. And we're also thinking about how this can, you know, increase access, you know, for millions who, you know, maybe want to get out more than they currently do. And that's actually something where I was, someone was sharing with me some of RNIB's recent research, and they did find that a majority of people who are blind or partially sighted, you know, want to get out more than they currently do. And so I'm really hopeful that, you know, as we kind of help these skeptics better understand Waymo and what we're about, that you know, they start thinking a little bit more about other people and how this technology can benefit their neighbors.
And that brings me very nicely, actually, onto the topic of accessibility. So, what features are there for, well, for accessibility in general, but specifically for blind and partially sighted travellers as well? Because obviously, if there's no person there, there's no physical driver to help you out, how does that work?
So our team is thinking about accessibility from the moment that you open the app to, you know, the moment that you're getting out of the vehicle and going to your final destination. So the app itself, the Waymo app, is accessible with screen readers, voiceover, and you know, we will give you the information, you know, of how long it'll be until your car gets here. When the car is about a minute out, you'll get a little haptic cue, a little buzz on your phone, to say like, "Hey, car's approaching." And then once the car reaches its, you know, pickup point, you have an opportunity to navigate within the app to say, "Find my vehicle" or "Find my car." And what that does is gives you a couple options. One, you can get step-by-step walking directions that also have haptic cues, you know, like, "Hey, 300, you know, feet to your left," or and kind of helps guide you directly to the vehicle itself. You could also use some of our audio cues. So that could be a gentle melody or chime that the vehicle can play to kind of help someone if they're trying to figure out, like, is it to my left or right? And they, you know, prefer that mode. There's also a horn honking function in a busy city like London. I'm assuming people probably won't use that function as much. And then once you're in the vehicle,
Yeah, it wouldn't make a difference.
once you're in the vehicle, the car greets you. So that's always helpful too. You know, you can it acknowledges, like, it'll say like, "Hey, Callum," when you get into the vehicle. And then you can also use our accessibility app for a couple other features, such as in-car audio cues. That one's great because while you're in the vehicle, the PA system inside the car will actually give you additional cues to say, you know, waiting for the intersection to clear, or you know, stopping for a pedestrian, or there's, you know, a cyclist outside your door, don't open the door. Additionally, it will also just give you cues on where you are in your journey. So while you're riding along, it'll say continuing along Main Street, or, you know, proceeding on this road. And I find that that's when I work with people who, you know, are in the disability community, that is one of the things that always comes up time and time again. They love that feature because there's so many times where maybe you're in a car with a stranger and you're like, oh, I feel bad. I want to know exactly where we are in the journey. I've been in the car for about 5 minutes. And that's something that our team is solved for.
I think, because one of the things that would, I guess, confuse me a little bit, especially at the start, is if the car stops, I know that part of me would be thinking, is it waiting for traffic or has something gone wrong here? What's going on?
Exactly.
So does that give you information about kind of where you're traveling as well? You know, like what roads you're on, what direction you're heading, things like that.
Yep, it'll give you that information. It's selective. It's every few minutes usually, or if there's a shift. When the car suddenly stops, I have these cues turned on. I am sighted, but I actually really appreciate this feature a lot myself, because it'll say stopping for object in the road or stopping for a pedestrian, waiting for, you know, the junction or intersection to clear. And for me, that's really useful because I'm, you know, distracted. I'm talking to who's sitting next to me, or I'm, you know, listening to the music and singing along. And it's nice to know when the car does have, like, you know, when it's stopped or it's not moving, it gives me that cue. And I'm like, okay, great. Thanks, Waymo.
How does it work if, because I mentioned there about has something gone wrong. If something actually does go wrong, like, I don't know, say it can't find where it needs to go, or let's just be honest about it, someone near the car is driving like an absolute idiot, which they do all the time in London. How does it handle that?
I once had a road safety expert in the vehicle, and when they were done with their ride, they came out and said, wow, there are defensive driving principles that are embedded in the code here. And so the vehicle is always, the Waymo driver, I should say, is always going to be thinking about what are the rules of the road here. And the Waymo driver is going to be driving defensively. It's going to go the speed limit. It's going to pay attention to everyone that it's sharing the road with. Basically, whenever it's driving, it's answering four key questions. You know, where am I? What's around me? What's everyone else doing? And then what do I do? And that is happening in split seconds. It's four questions, but it's happening very quickly, constantly, when the vehicle's on the road. So when it comes to other drivers, you know, the Waymo driver is going to always err on the side of caution and safety. That's, you know, key to everything that we're doing here in this technology. For the in-car experience, you can access 24/7 rider support through an app in your phone or the in-car screen that's in both the front part of the cabin and the back seat cabin of the vehicle. And someone will be brought in from the PA system from one of our rider support teams, and they can help answer questions that someone might have. So, you know, hey, like, my car seems to be stopped, you know, am I at my final destination? Any of those kinds of questions. I actually had someone once tell me that they decided to just stop because they saw a yard sale they wanted to stop at. And so there's also a pullover function. If someone's like, hey, you know what, this is actually where I want to get off, you can also use that function and Waymo will find a safe place to pull over.
Interesting. So, I mean, clearly a lot of thought has gone into it. What has feedback been like so far, you know, specifically from blind and partially sighted people? Has there been anything that has kind of come up that you maybe hadn't thought about, or, you know, something that's been implemented from feedback?
So I help lead our Waymo Accessibility Network, which is a forum of representatives from several different types of disability charities and organizations. And of course, we have many people who are representing, you know, the blind community. And I think the horn honking function was actually one of the first features that was really requested by blind people, which is, you know, hey, wayfinding, how do we find the vehicle? How do we know that it's our vehicle? And that one in particular, I know, has come up multiple times. And then, you know, we incorporated it, and then it's something that everyone uses. There's that really beautiful connection to universal design that our team embraces when we're thinking about these kinds of features. The other thing that I hear a lot from blind people, especially blind people who have guide dogs, is that there's no negotiation. So when you hail Waymo,
yes,
the car is completely empty and you and your guide dog can get into the vehicle and go where you need to go. And you don't have to talk about, is it a pet or is it a guide dog? You don't have to, you know, negotiate. And it's honestly like, when I talk to people who have guide dogs, they tell me that this is just a peace of mind, like a weight just lifted when it's just you in the car.
That's my main argument. That's my number one argument for driverless cars, to be honest, or driverless taxis, at least. Hey, it's not going to refuse your guide dog.
My friend Ron has a guide dog, and he told me he lives in Phoenix, which is one of the cities in the U.S. where we first launched. And he says his guide dog, York, actually will seek out a Waymo now. He almost thinks the Waymos like are his cars. And I love that story.
Amazing. So this is all in the U.S. at the minute. What can you tell us about the London rollout?
Yeah, so we just announced that we're going to be coming to London next year. It's going to be our first European city. And in the coming months, we're going to lay the groundwork for our service. We're going to do that in collaboration with our fleet partner, Move. That's Move with two O's. And continue to engage with local and national leaders to secure the necessary permissions we need for our commercial ride hailing service. So, you know, we're still in the process of, you know, earning the public trust. That's where my team comes in. We get to work with organizations like Royal National Institute of Blind People and, you know, help the community understand what we're all about here at Waymo. And, you know, my team is still in listening mode, and we want this service to really be meaningful and useful for people when we decide to come to London. So that's what you can expect between now and when we launch.
And that's it from us this week. That is our best of this year. And of course, there's been many more great moments, great people we spoke to, but we've only got an hour and we just can't fit them all in. So there's just a few highlights. Thank you so much, as always, for joining us this week and this year. You know, we get together, we do this show, and for us, I mean, well, I don't want to speak for all of you, but for me at least, it's just an opportunity to kind of sit down and talk about tech, really, which I'll never turn down. But hearing from you guys tuning in and sharing the podcast and getting in touch, it really does mean a lot. So hope you'll join us next year, I guess. But in the meantime, from me, Callum Stoneman, Hubert Pavalkovic, Jackie Brown, and Natalie Curran, bye for now.
Goodbye.
Bye for now.
Bye, and Happy New Year.
Bye-bye. Happy New Year.